Come with us now, if you dare, down a rickety staircase into a dank, dark basement. What awaits? The Saturday Night Freak Show.
Welcome back, ladies and germs, to the Saturday Night Freak Show podcast. Every Saturday night, it happens right here in the dank, dark basement. Thanks for joining us here at the bar. We're not as sloshed as we were in previous weeks, are we? We're still good. Saturday, one of us picks a movie, forces the rest of us to watch it, then we throw it to the wolves here at the bar, the Thunderdome, where one movie enters and like five people leave.
You should have a dome over this thing.
I'm Colin. I'm surrounded by the internet radio superstars.
Travis.
Brent.
Sean.
Jenny.
I should have also done some housekeeping and mentioned that you can find us on Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Facebook.com/Saturday Night Freak Show, on Twitter @SatFreakShow, and you can email us SaturdayNightFreakShow@Yahoo.com. We'll have your comments later in Igor's mailbag.
Have we ever gotten an email? This so-called
I don't think
email.
We have, actually. The Open email Facebook thing, yeah, it's all.
Not since network. Early on, right? I feel like you guys did early on.
Maybe. I don't remember. So long ago. We're like 150 episodes
back in
or something.
The glory days.
So tonight's movie was chosen by Travis. Travis, what did we watch tonight?
American Pop, the animated classic by Ralph Bakshi.
And we're thinking we're pegging this at like 1981.
Yep.
Yeah, I think so, right? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Did we agree on that?
I think that's the consensus, yeah.
All right, we don't know if it's
I watched the trailer earlier today. It said 1981.
Okay, there we go.
No one looked at the cover.
So, Ralph Bakshi... Can you take us through like a little bit of history, who this guy is?
Well, I don't really know much about him, but I know his movies. You know his movies. We all know his movies. Maybe not a lot, but Wizards, Hey Good Looking.
Oh, shit. I forgot about that.
Fritz the Cat.
Yeah.
He did the first Fritz the Cat.
Which that was like revolutionary at the time that it was made because, I think even still, it's the first X-rated cartoon. And that was based on the R. Crumb.
Yeah, the R. Crumb strip. Hated by him.
Yeah.
And what else did he do?
Well, did we say...
We did this, Street
Trash?
Yeah, Street Trash.
Which is also known as Coonskin. Lord of the Rings, I think, is maybe like his most famous, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that lets you know that he's a like an Eastern animator, or like an East Coast animator, right?
Yeah, he's very
good. Coonskin. The guy, I mean, that's... The way he portrays... Different races, you can just tell that, you know, the characters. Yeah. I'm not saying that he's
caricatures.
A racist.
We'll call them caricatures because they are exaggerated versions.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't he at some point have something to do with a Mighty Mouse cartoon in like the 90s?
I wouldn't know.
Anyone?
Nobody knows.
New Adventures of Mighty Mouse? I want to say.
Is that what it says in his bio?
It was rough. No, I'm just remembering this from. Because it seems to me, I mean, I kind of sort of followed him because the first movie I think I saw of his was Fire and Ice, fantasy
Fire and
movie.
Ice.
And that's based on like Frank Frazetta paintings and stuff like that, but it doesn't look anything like a Frank Frazetta painting. When you see the movie, it's very Ralph Bakshi, and then Cool World, I think, was his last.
Yeah, Cool World.
Well, he's got something out now called The Last Days of Coney Island, which I think is something you can only download on like Vimeo or something like that. It's like a 40-minute short animation, but I just watched the little trailer for it, or maybe it was a Kickstarter, I'm not sure, but it looked like the caricature work that you saw in American Pop here, but like the whole movie was like that. So it's really rough. It's like kind of sketched in animation. It was like it wasn't finished. I don't know. That's why it made me think it was maybe a Kickstarter. Bakshi is, I think, controversial in animation circles because he employs a technique known as rotoscoping. This is
which actually everybody uses,
but he uses what is it? Just because he uses it extensively?
Probably.
I mean, it's like every scene, right?
Because he's really, yeah. I mean, I guess he just wants to like get the story out, I suppose. So rotoscoping the animation, like just with the actors and doing it as close as possible, where I suppose other animators would either just rotoscope, either just. The most expensive scenes, or still kind of like.
Wait, do we define what rotoscoping was?
Rotoscoping is filming something and then basically tracing over the. I don't know if you would just trace over the actual frame or
Yeah, I think they blow it up.
Yeah, like
one frame at a time, and then draw over it.
Yeah,
painstaking process.
Yeah. Yeah.
They've done it recently in like Richard Linklater did two movies. I want to say
Scanner Darkly
and Scanner Darkly. And I know there's something else that employed it recently, but I mean, yeah, it's kind of the two-dimensional forerunner of what would be like motion capture now.
Basically, right.
Right.
And a lot of people don't really like it because, I mean, you get like kind of a jittery effect because, I mean, if someone's like you got all these people animating all these different frames, just the way angles are, right, when someone moves.
Oh, and they do. The backgrounds are separate? Like, they're not actually in those backgrounds. It's more like...
It's like watching
backgrounds
old...
are even more cartoony than the actual... Yeah. That's what, like, stands also... out about this.
Yeah, but they're... I mean, they're still, like, old... Even old Nick cartoons did this. Like, you go back and watch Ren and Snippy. You know, you can see what's going to move and what is just, like, background shit that is just stationary and all that. I like the animation for this, the rotoscoping. Like, I think it's cool.
Yeah,
I like the movements it gives.
You
to
get
the characters
exact movements of the actors.
Right.
You get like the precise.
You get all that human. It gives a human element to an animated object.
You get,
I like it.
Really good facial features.
Yeah.
You know, different expressions. Like I said, it can look a little weird. Different angles.
Mm-hmm.
When someone smiles, their teeth and shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
I heard they could never get bow ties right.
Who the hell is that?
We have a studio audience.
What the hell is that?
Well, what's
Dave sneaking in real quick? Excuse me, I was supposed to be quiet. But I decided.
Moving on.
Did the original Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, did that employ rotoscoping?
I think so.
Because to my eye, it adds like a fluidity, I guess, to the animation that you usually don't see in... like regular anime. Cause,
right,
I mean,
it just makes it easier to...
I don't know if it did. I don't think it did.
I think it did.
Didn't make a...
I don't think it had the rotoscoping. No. I think they painted all the backgrounds first. I think they did that for a lot of
the... rotoscoping's for the characters.
Yeah.
Okay. They would just... It's the movements, you know?
Okay.
So they actually... They filmed someone against like a blue screen or a black background, and then they traced them. So like the background that you're seeing is like a painted...
Yeah.
You know, image. And then they layer like this clear cellophane with just the character on top of it, like one frame at a time. So the background just kind of remains static, but they're changing, you know, 24 frames per second, the drawings. And to get those drawings, they've traced, you know, some live film that they shot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It just, you know, I mean, I guess it's, you know, it's not seen as like pure animation by like the Disney type animators, right? Who would do everything by hand. And I think maybe that's why Snow White looks so smooth, is that did actually like 24 frames per second, where film runs at 24 frames per second, but like usually like a lot of like Japanese animations and I want to say Saturday morning cartoons, they would only do like what, like 12 or 14 frames?
Something like that, yeah.
And they double up, you know, every so many frames, they would photograph the same frame twice, you know, to make it last a little longer. But yeah, like Akira, I want to say, is like a 24 frames, you know, every single one of those frames is drawn. And Snow White, and I think the boxing movies are too, but he's kind of cheating, you know, with the movement because it's not all just coming from a, you know, animator looking in the mirror and then drawing himself or whatever. It's actually, he's tracing like an actual person who's acted it out. So you're actually shooting the movie and then tracing it over.
But it's with this film, it's done like, they're rotoscoping, but the color palette that they're using is almost, I mean, it's very stylized for the different periods of time that they're in. It seems very creative versus like Lord of the Rings, where like it almost like in his Lord of the Rings, it looks like all the orcs are running at the camera and they just like silhouetted guys and they
right,
don't even they show the actual film. they don't even rotoscope it.
And I mean, he does a little bit of that in this, right?
Yeah.
To like edit segments together, he just shows some like black and white film from from, you know, whatever, yeah, archival footage or whatever the hell. You know, I mean, yeah, I guess it's cheap animation, but I mean, animation is expensive, right?
Yeah.
So he's going, like, you know, I'm sure he's just going to like, cheap.
I still think it's painstaking. I don't know if it's, cheap when he does this.
No.
I'm saying that, like, the
It might be, but it works.
Well, I'm saying that using the real film footage, it's a way to
fill in the gaps.
Yeah, you're
but it also adds
some financial quarters.
It adds a lot, I think, to this story, movie. I think it works, whether people look at it as cheap or cutting corners or what have you, but I think it works for this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it adds a lot to it for me.
So did they shoot those scenes cheaply? I mean, like, in a not-so, not in a film studio, but did they just, have guys in their everyday clothes shoot it, and then he would trace over it for the rotoscoping?
Yeah, like, I wonder, because, their costumes were obviously, like, moving fluidly with them, so I'm sure the people were in somewhat costumes, right?
Yeah, well, I saw the making of Fire and Ice, where they actually showed some of the behind-the-scenes stuff. So, I mean, yeah, it's actors in costumes, and I think, I saw black and white photos, so I don't know if it was against a white wall or a green screen or what. But it was, some kind of high contrast surface. So you could easily see the person and be able to trace the edges of the lines,
Yeah.
But yeah, it was people in costume. I mean, I think in American Pop, at the very end, there's like a live music performance where the lead character, it's like you're seeing the guy
live,
who was traced.
Yeah.
In costume with his band, so it's like, I think that was the model.
And even though we're, like, skipping to the, like, way end, isn't it kind of weird that they at least had, like, his, like, smile reaction at the end of the show? It's almost like, almost like that's when you're like, fuck, man, we're kind of tight on the budget, let's just put some, like, weird filters on, like, this footage, and then we'll, like, just animate, like, the last few seconds.
Yeah.
Well, I remember that's how Lord of the Rings felt. It was, like, that movie was, like, fully animated, feels like, for the first, like, hour and a half? And then it's, like, at the end, it just kind of is, like, okay, now here comes the guys in the silhouettes. And it really feels like the animation just, like, we either don't have the stamina to finish this thing, or there's a deadline, and we don't have any money left, so let's just put the test footage in the movie.
Like, for something like American Pop, how do you think they're doing it? Do you think, like, there's just teams of tracers, animators, I guess?
I'm sure.
I mean, because, like, that's too much, right? To take on all, like, you can't have, like, you have to have, like, somebody for each
scene. They probably
have
segments, because you can see how, like, I mean, we'll get to the stories later, but, like, in the beginning of the third character's story where he meets the band, you could tell, like, the female character, she has a different look to her than the whole rest of the film, right? Just that one scene, there's just a look to her different. And I don't know if it's because they were sculpting it more like the actress, and then in the additional scenes after we were introduced to her, then she has that more, almost like the Cool World girl sculpted, like a more...
Because she's very haggard at the beginning. And
She looks a little like, I don't know, like it is almost like they're doing that real trace of the photo, right? And they're like,
Yeah.
But, I think, like, a movie like this, the reason why, like, when people say animation is cheating, or this rotoscoping is cheating, I think when it comes to situations like this, I don't think American Pop is really what you would call, like, an animated film. It's a period piece spanning, like,
many generations.
Like, yeah, like 4 or 5 generations, and just to do it animated, come on, how much money did they save alone?
Oh, yeah, in set design and
in
building.
From everything from freaking 1912 to, like, ending in, like, 1980 or whatever, right? So I just think, like, animation is the way to go, right? Regardless of, like, you're not, like, drawing it based on your pure instinct or, like, whatever, you're not. But rotoscoping, like I said, it's been used by everyone forever. It's so funny how, there's this kind of, but I mean, everyone
artistically,
uses it.
This movie, I mean, besides that going on, there's, you know, at the beginning, it's weird because it's like this kind of a Rembrandt kind of drawing kind of thing that you see. And as they go on through the ages, you know, you have like a Norman Rockwell type of scene, or you have like an, what's his name?
Oh, you're saying during the credits?
No. As they show backgrounds, you know, the scenes of what's going on in New York, like Jenny said, it was, who's the...
Gershwin.
Gershwin kind of music going on, and there was that scene of, you know, they'd show backgrounds that were artistically drawn, but not, you know, animated, and then some of these animated characters were like, in backgrounds, but they were animated over, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, kind of like when they got into the 70s or 80s, it looked kind of like that Good Times picture.
Like,
you know?
Warhol, are you thinking?
Warhol. Depending on whatever era they were in, you know, mm-hmm. how that kind of advanced throughout the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The backgrounds versus the rotoscoping. I mean, there was always that going on, no matter whether it was a flapper girl or a jazz girl or band or whatever going on, but there was always that different kind of background that was going on as they went through the different ages of this music scene that was going on.
Yeah,
the art, I mean, some of it was really fucking cool. I mean, the background, I mean, and from the very beginning, it was kind of like, you know, from this Renaissance all the way up to this modern, you know, I'm being kind of artsy fartsy about it, but
well, I mean, that is the point of the movie, I think, right? I mean, this is a movie from a guy who, like, loves, I think, both America and, you know, the idea of America. He's, like, looking at American history. I mean, it's a dark side to it, but it's, like, the promise, I think, that, you know.
It's an immigrant story.
Well, yeah. And he looks at, like, the
and music, I guess.
City, New York,
yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
I mean, it never leaves New York. They're always there. It's always the turmoil of that, you know, as they come up. Sorry.
No, that's true. No, that's a good point, Dave. I agree, and I think though also that, like, adding on to that, it's the music scene that like the different waves that came along. You know, it's not like there are certain styles of music that have always been around and always been popular, but it's like they do, you know, like the jazz, and they do the I guess what would you call the 70s, the hippie, or the 60s, just rock and roll,
acid rock.
Yeah.
I mean, we go through
rock and roll,
and the psychedelic,
you go through punk,
yeah, and then the punk,
and
yeah.
to Bob Seger,
swing, yeah. Yeah.
This great multi generational movie like culminates in Bob Seger.
Well, now we can say, like, oh, Bob Seger. But, like, at the time, I'm sure, like, that was...
Like, yeah, I'm trying to think. Like, 1980, right? I mean, you're before, you know, like, what's the next, like, seismic thing? Like, Bon Jovi? If it would have stuck around, you would have had, like, glam metal. And then if it would have kept going to finish off the decade, or the century, you would have eventually evolved into...
Bruce Springsteen.
Right, but
don't forget about the boss.
The movie stops before they had invented R&B and rap,
yeah,
which would have closed out the century, right?
Yeah,
that would have been the evolution or de-evolution of
that's why they made the way.
Or
that's true.
Well, that's the question. You know, for I guess you guys is like, you know, I mean, you watch this thing. Is it charting a evolution or a de-evolution of music?
It's the evolution of music. It was supposed to be that guy. His dad brought him down, and then he only had his harmonica, and then he played the piano, and then he was coming up from the piano jazz generation, and then he got hooked on heroin, and then he was hanging out in the streets, and he turned it on to the kid, and then the kid became the drug dealer / musician, and finally the musician, and then it ended with him being the rock star.
I think it's the evolution of music. Yes.
Yeah.
I think it's the evolution of music, but it's also the influence music has on this one particular family within each generation, and how finally, after, you know, it took four generations for one person, even though everyone's been involved in music, the fourth generation finally made it. It finally made it.
Did he make it?
It's like the dreams of the story.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Very much so. That is very much the story.
Yes,
because
thank you.
Got, like you said, you got the immigrant, you got Zalmy that came over from Russia, like in what, 1912 or something?
Yeah,
something like
very early.
Well, and
gets,
I mean,
like, hooked up in the.
If the, you know, they could tell.
The old vaudeville.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, they couldn't tell, but, like, the reason why the other. I mean, I think that the other generations did make it to an extent, but. Also, there's new influences in music coming up, and so, like, everything has to have its time, and as, like, one you know, musical scene was ending, that character was done, and then they were moving on, but once you got to the 80s, it's like, well, this came out in 81, so nobody knows where it was going. You know, now it would be like, well, and then the 90s and the rap came in, and the pop, and... You know, it would be a different story.
Well, the 90s.
Well, I think what made Pete at the end was kind of the experience of his generation, you know, of his family line, right? It's like that kind of like, what would you call it? I can say that hard work and blah, 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 blah. But.
Well, it was kind of cool because, you know, the kid that finally made it, you know, the kid from the fourth generation, it was like he was fulfilling the dreams of what would have been his great grandfather would have done had he not, you know,
gone shot in the throat.
Yeah.
World War One.
Yeah, because none of the other, like his grandfather or father, neither one of them could sing. They were just musically talented. They could play different instruments. But
yeah,
I thought that was cool.
Well, I like how the second generation guy is not even interested, right? It's like he's grown up around music.
Like,
so, to him, just any life experience is more interesting than even playing music. Mm-hmm. You know, he'd rather fucking join the army or rather, you know.
Yeah, because that guy's already rich, right? I mean, his father, the first guy, that we Zalmy, has partnered up with the mob at this point.
Yeah.
And so, you know.
Oh, is that why he went to the mob?
No, he was rich with music.
He marries the mobster's daughter or whatever, moves into that gigantic palace. So it's not like
that
he needs to
weird.
Make it with
that was
his
a
music,
weird
you know?
Part of that movie.
No, I was like,
it was like a Godfather.
It's because you need more foot soldiers.
Yeah.
That's why you gotta have kids. Because
you gotta expand the family.
Yeah, you gotta have people.
Expand the empire.
Is that why? Is that why he ended up going to prison? The first generation.
I
don't know, Zalmy?
Yeah, Zalmy. They don't necessarily say why he went to
I thought
prison.
I missed something.
They said,
it was mob dealings.
That's the funny thing about this movie, man. It's like, this every 30 seconds is another, like, 5 to 10 years.
Yeah.
So it's like,
it goes quick.
If you, like, leave the room or go to the bathroom, you'll be like, what happened? The guy's grown up now? Or what?
That quick.
I thought I missed something. That's why I wanted to ask if they actually disclosed that information.
Says something like, I sit out. I want him to see what a real man acts like.
Yeah.
And says something about how...
He
took the fall for something.
He went to jail. He took the fall for some mob action, and he stayed there because they told him, "We'll come for you. We'll be there soon." And then
We'll get you out.
We'll be there in a few weeks.
First, they told me it's been eight years. Yeah,
8 years is a long
time.
Well,
I wondered. It was kind of implied that
he got to sing.
That Zalmy had done something, you know, to get his hands dirty because
he I'm sure he has.
He's talking to what's the guy who brought him? Not brought him over, but
Luke,
the
fine.
The guy who works the flapper joint.
Louis is like the guy that kind of
takes him in after his mom gets blown
up. There's like a really cool like camaraderie. I like that line he says about the kid's nothing to me, I'm nothing to him. It's more than I got elsewhere. You know, it's a little
But isn't there a scene like in the, what were we saying, like the 40s? This is after the montage of the Tommy gun. Right?
Yeah.
When the Prohibition's actually happening,
well, listen,
he says something to Louis about, Zalmy says something to Louis about, like, it's a bloody business, you know, Louis, and like, I can't remember. So that was like,
I've never seen so much blood.
He goes,
like, is he killing
the booze, I understand. He needs the booze for the club, but why is he cutting out the middleman? Jesus,
he's cutting the middle out of the middleman.
I've never seen so much blood in all my life.
Oh, there you go.
I don't like this.
So you're thinking that Zalmy is not firsthand involved in, like, murdering.
But he's
I think
kinda,
he gets there.
He's kind of, he's around it for sure. Yeah. Because I think they imply... It's hard to tell, but in the movie, when you're seeing the montage of the dudes with the Tommy guns, you see Zalmi's eyes with the window rolled down, and he's looking. Mm. So, I don't know.
He's definitely in the light.
He's in the car. Like, he's definitely in the light because he gets his wife, you know, to get his wife, to make his wife like a big singer, yeah, to get into all the clubs and all the speakeasies.
Yeah.
That's what I like about this movie. Like you said, it's all in the dialogue, right? Like, Louis just says something about, like...
Really good dialogue.
The dude says something about how, I just seen the most beautiful woman I ever... Or, I just seen something beautiful. And he's like, what, some pre-prohibition booze?
Yeah.
And then in the next scene, they talk about, like, you know, who wants to see a comedian... You know, you got one eye cocked for the cops, and so you know we've already,
right,
mm-hmm, you know, transgressed into the prohibition era, and mm-hmm, it's kind of funny how it's like they almost are like snippets left out, really big chunks left out, but the characters say enough, if you really pay attention, right, they say enough to really fill in, yeah, where they are at the time, where, and it doesn't feel like just exposition.
It gives you where they are, what's going on, the relationships, how they've advanced through, yeah, the years. Like, you get a lot from that. Like you said, if you do
get
listen,
lot.
You get a lot. It's good.
I noticed, too, that, like, the each of the segments, it seemed, would build toward, you know, each of the segments containing, like, one of the guys. What do we say?
Generation.
Four guys?
One
four
of the guys.
One of the guys.
Four guys.
We got Zami, Benny,
Tony,
and then Pete.
So each one of them seems to... It's not like a climax to their story, but there's a moment where there is some type of large musical number intercut with violence. Zalmi's story, it's like some kind of Gershwin tune is going. I can't remember. Is it the dancers? It's like everybody's dancing, and intercut with that is like the mob going in and like,
yeah, it's like the big band. It's a swing and everything.
Yeah. And then Benny, it's World War II, and
yes,
it was like just people being fucking blown up and, yeah, shot to hell, like on the battlefield of World War II.
Is that?
Or is he German?
I'm not sure.
Because he has a, you know,
he's Russian, right?
Is he Russian?
Bakshi? I don't know.
Oh, Bakshi.
The director of this movie.
Oh, yeah. Fuck, I don't know.
I don't know if that seems Polish, but I don't know.
And he did, sure, Wizards, too.
He did what?
So
Wizards also?
Yeah.
He always has, a couple of Jewish things in there, where there's that priest that had to finish there, that, whatever you call it. Yeah, the rabbi had to finish the prayer,
mm-hmm,
before everything got shot up in that. And then there was a scene in Wizards once, or in Wizards, where these Jews had to finish this before they got blown away. It was a couple of priests, and it was just a strange kind of World War II.
Maybe he's Jewish.
Cut.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, awesome. Seinfeld makes Jewish jokes. Larry David makes these Nazi jokes, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, is he Jewish or is he German or is...
Jewish.
I mean, I can kind of get where the jokes are coming from, but that's kind of a heavy joke, you know.
If they're making German jokes, they're probably
Larry
Jewish.
Davis, yeah, Jerry, I mean, Seinfeld, or this guy, you know,
is,
what I mean?
I mean, you know, I saw it, I don't know, like so many... Like, it's not, like, funny jokes and stuff like that. There were a lot of just...
They always
kind
bring
of,
that up, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I mean, there was, like, a respectfulness thing for the idea, I guess, that, you know, the immigrant kid, Zalmi, is, like, a Russian Jew, right? And then he, Benny is the product of... No, he marries an Italian.
The son goes to war.
Yeah,
remember?
But he, yeah, has a... So the Tony is like a Jewish-Italian kid from New York then, right? By the time we get to generation number three?
Yeah, I would say so.
And then Pete finds his way back eventually to... You know, he's like a Kansas kid, but he,
yeah,
finds his way back to New York, to home. There's something else I...
Did they ever say what happened to Pete's mom?
No.
Pete's the one that you really don't know much about.
Yeah.
That's like the one story that,
the little black haired kid at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It seems like they spend most of their time with Zalmi and Tony, right?
Yeah.
Is that the impression?
Yeah. Benny is very short.
You're supposed to get that idea that, right? That, yeah, he dies. Benny. You know, he needs to just get the chick pregnant.
Yeah, that's his, yeah.
I can't believe he's alive in that movie after hanging out on the streets of New York with this would-be junkie that's just... You know, selling his guitar.
Oh, Pete at the end.
I mean, it was just awful.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
he's, what's he doing at the end? He's, you know, throwing out bags as he's going in.
Oh, he's turning into a drug dealer.
Yeah, but actually,
but
that
it's,
was, that
it's,
was
it's a
thing.
Means to an end.
Yeah, but yeah. I also, this movie, like, seems to trace the evolution of drugs. In the, in the 30s, yeah. it's alcohol.
Music
it eventually goes
yeah.
to heroin.
Heroin.
And then to cocaine. And then
yeah.
you just see all
yeah.
that.
Yeah. yeah. No, well.
Pot's been around forever.
Well, they touch on pot a little bit in the 50s, I guess. But it doesn't
it's,
seem to be, like, yeah. as big of a, like, you know,
it's not,
the heroin.
Yeah.
Well, there's a really weird scene
like
in the
synthetic
60s where the chick's like, hey, Tony, we got any more of this? And
yeah.
she's, like, holding a pipe. It's like, what the fuck, man? You're that hard up for weed? I'm like.
Yeah.
And it's the gateway to her to then eventually goes to heroin, which
well,
destroys
her very
her
first scene,
Tony.
She's wearing the bell on her necklace. Her necklace is her arm bell.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, because you see it around her arm when they're carrying her out.
She's already been into heroin.
Yeah,
that guy, Tony, is the most interesting, right? Because he really doesn't have any musical ability. That's what I'm saying. This is almost about how...
But he can write.
It's almost like none of them could have made it without the experiences of
the other
generations, right? Mm-hmm. So Tony isn't musically inclined at all, right? But he's a very fucking trippy kid in the 70s, you know? Like,
well,
listening to fucking crazy-ass...
Yeah, the beatniks?
The spoken poetry.
Yeah, it's like that's actually
jazz.
Talking to him. Yeah, well, every time he talks, I mean, but that's what's cool about the character.
Weird.
When he talks in this... It's not flowery language, but it's like, you know... He's got,
cold, pop, cold, cracking jacks.
Where it's like, oh, that guy can
the
write
prize
music.
In my
well, of
box.
Course, you know, he's a lyricist. He's the guy who's the poet. You know, he's walking around.
Should we break down the talents of each generation?
We can.
What?
Is that prudent? The talents of each generation? Like which each generation has to offer as far as their musical talents?
Well, Zalmi has...
Our listeners?
Zalmi's a singer.
He would have been a singer, yeah.
He would have been
a singer.
But he loses that ability in World War I.
But he knows how to perform.
He's just
so that's
the
how he's able.
Guy, right?
He is
yeah,
the
he's
show
almost
biz,
like
yeah.
a producer.
Yeah,
right?
So
he knows.
He could have been good. He would have known how to perform, but he lost that ability. So that's how he was able to coach his wife.
Yeah.
And taught it
to
his kid,
it.
Basically. Made,
yeah.
his, made his kid almost like what he couldn't do, he was able to teach his wife and his child to do. And then.
Yeah, because Benny is like a genius pianist.
He's
yeah.
a genius
like just,
pianist that
he
just
has
doesn't
a,
care.
I mean, he's just got it in the blood, right?
A genius pianist
that just doesn't care.
Genius pianist.
Genius pianist. That's my movie.
Genius pianist.
The genius pianist.
Well, while he's overseas, he learns to play the harmonica because he can't play the piano.
I don't get the impression
he can't
he
fit
learns.
A piano
yeah,
in a foxhole.
Well,
he's got that cool. He's almost like Elvis, right?
He just
almost
got the make music
him like
in.
An Elvis.
He's too cool, yeah.
He's drawn almost like Elvis.
Yeah, I thought he was drawn like Stallone.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No?
Yeah, I can see Stallone.
You know, like a little bit of the Rocky,
yeah.
and the droopy eye, and the.
He does have the coolest death scene though, where he finds the piano and starts playing, and then the German guy sneaks out. And then when he sees, I think that's an awesome idea. Seeing a German dude, all I can think to do is play a German song that like. Puts him in a music trance in a weird way, right?
Yeah, because it humanizes those two guys. Like, right then, it's like you got the one guy who's so weird, he wants to be, you know, lives in music in his head, finds a piano, and it's like you're sitting there going, like, you're going through, like, this enemy village in wherever the hell they are, France or Germany or wherever, and he's like, he just kind of like, there's a piano. It goes over and starts playing. And it's like, you're making, like, a fuckload of noise. Your company just moved up the road, you know, but it's the idea that, like, The music talks so much to this
you
guy.
Think
that, like,
until
that's...
he played a German song for the German, and the German applauded him, and then killed him immediately after that.
But the German, it's like he's like wounded or something. Has been hiding out here, and you see him stagger out, and he's like going to kill the guy playing the piano.
Until he played the German song.
Yeah, but
he soothed him until and then he was like Danke. And then shot his ass.
It gave him a little bit of
little
touch of humanity,
did.
I think, right?
Yeah.
To his soul. It was like, here on this battlefield, there's this guy playing, and he's actually going to play the German, national anthem. Don't know.
Don't know.
A song.
Some kind of German.
But it connects them in a way.
Yeah. And then he's like, thank you. And then it's like, well, you know, these guys are still...
Well, just because of you know, the idea of, like, being out in war for, like, months and months, yeah, if not years. And then, like, hearing music, you know.
The German soldier seems very distraught. And, like, I don't know if he's injured or not, but he seems like he is, like, you know, just, like, he's done with war. You know, he's, like, that panic mode. And... like, there is that moment of calming, but he's still, you know, he's still going to shoot him because he's the enemy. Like,
yeah,
there's,
like an enemy.
But, yeah. There is that moment of, like
the Private Ryan scene.
That, yeah. It's a lot like that.
Please don't. And he's like, this is it, man. You're getting killed. Yeah. I mean, this is war, brother. Yeah. I'm sorry. And so that's a very stressful scene.
Right, but the difference is that, though, Benny knows that, though, and he's not. I mean, he's not going to fight against it.
He's like ready to die.
He's ready. He just stops, right? He's done.
He doesn't even try to.
Yeah, they have that. He looks in the eye.
Well, he's playing piano. Like, that's what makes him happy. It's like, you know, what better way to go?
You think he like took it for granted then? You think he could have, like, you know, should have just made a record?
I think he should have picked
it up. Yeah, Benny, it is important.
Right on that guy's head.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, what
was a cartoon, right?
Yeah.
Should have fucking.
If my
dog. Ran to the nearest phone booth.
You know, it's not the Wile E. Coyote.
Well, I mean, the idea that... No, I forgot my train of thought. It was something about that. That, shit.
Pianos, Germany.
Yeah.
Jews.
Yep.
Juice.
Come on. The juice.
Giving up.
I'm giving up. All right, moving on.
So we go to Tony, right?
To Tony.
Yeah, so we find out he's a real just weirdo mind, kind of...
Well, he lost his father. He never knew his dad.
And he's a product of his time, too, right? I mean,
he's a rebel.
He is.
I love the whole.
He's going to take off to fucking Haight Ashbury.
What are you watching? The TV? You can watch the TV when it's off.
Were those foster children? Like, what? Those kids, who were
they?
Well,
I think
they're kids from his mom.
The previous scene, Palomo was talking. He's like, you know, you said you didn't want to marry into the family? Like, So Benny's wife remarried some refrigerator guy. Then like
three guys, it sounds like.
Oh, okay.
Was it three?
Which, like, you want to marry a guy who did this? I let you. You wanted to marry a guy who did this? I let you.
I thought he was just kind of like repeat, like kind of re-emphasizing.
That's what I took it, but
I think she moved on.
Now, Papa.
Yeah.
I think she moved on to a few guys.
Okay.
Well, something. Yeah. The kids. I think the kid. They're Tony's siblings.
Yes.
Okay.
They're half. Yeah. Step perhaps.
I missed that because I thought it was like, okay. Because
even says later, he's like,
now what the fuck?
But he's like, what do you care? It's not your father. That's what he says when he slams the door.
Yeah, but I like what Brett was talking about. I mean, right there, you see like where he's thinking. Right? They say, you know, what are you watching? TV. Oh, well, TV, you could watch whether it's on or off, you know? Yeah. Like, he has a specific answer that he wants in mind, right? But he's such a frustrated, rebellious kid that, you know, he fucking starts yelling at him, well, what are you watching?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, did you get your quarters, huh? Did the brain fairy give you your quarters list?
We're ignoring you, Tony.
Your brains are falling out all over.
Your ears are falling out. Your brains are falling out. Yeah. It's a fucking great scene, man.
Yeah. I mean, I remember from the times I've seen this before, you know, I mean, he's the one that stands out to me, you know, of all the characters that you see in this movie. It feels like, in hindsight, that his segment was longer.
I think it was. He was given the most time, it feels like.
I don't know. Like, well, Zalmi, you see him from when he's a kid, though.
Sure.
There's more time spent with him before he actually matures, I guess. So I think Zalmi does have at least equal screen time, but it's just, it feels like Zalmi is two people. It's the kid and then the adult. You know?
Well, also, because basically Tony is two people. Pete is mostly Tony's story, right? Because, I mean, Pete really doesn't have a story. Yeah. His story is with Tony. You know, Tony goes to California like everybody else in the world. I like how they actually use some archival footage of, like, train riders that they animated over.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can find that footage, you know. And he meets, basically, Jefferson Airplane. It's basically Jefferson Airplane.
Yeah.
Just kind of, you know,
and they need somebody to write their songs, but otherwise they're like a functioning, somewhat functioning band, right? They're aware that like their moment has landed on them. And it's like, we got to seize this moment. This is
at
the
least
time
Frankie
we
is.
To be, yeah, the lead singer, who is like a kind of a, I mean, it, I saw her more as like a Janis Joplin, but you think like a Grace Slick?
Well, you know what I mean. They're kind of an amalgamation.
The 60s
band. Yeah,
you got a black
dude that looks kind of like Jimi Hendrix, even though Jimi Hendrix shows up later, even though this guy is kind of designed to look like him.
Yeah.
That guy was Jimi Hendrix.
No.
Not the guy in the band.
No, the guy that was Jimi Hendrix.
Well, the guy they went on after.
Yes, he was. I agree. Yeah.
Whether or not that was Rotoscope Jimi Hendrix, I don't know.
If that was true.
Did we talk about Tony meeting the blonde chick in Kansas?
No.
Kansas.
When he's traveling across. That's what I like. Like, Tony represents
to go alone.
Yeah, he's got that one hand motion. Yeah. When he's fucking done with anything, waves it off.
That group he was with,
Kansas. I got a mortgage. I got payments I gotta make.
Yeah, dude, that scene always. Well, we watch this on DVD, and that always makes me sad because when he actually yells off screen to, "Hey, where are we?" There's supposed to be a dude walking the cow that turns back and says, "Kansas."
Right, how do you know that?
Well, because I fucking seen this movie on VHS. Like, does it
really VHS?
Is it shot missing?
It's different.
There's a shot missing.
Oh,
shit. He's supposed to.
You're supposed. It's a what is it?
VHS.
Video home system. Like, I don't know.
Video high cassette. No, shit, system. Video hi-fi system.
Video hi-fi system? Anyway.
I don't remember.
High fidelity?
I haven't thought of it in so long. Yeah.
I don't know.
Wow. You know, in 1978, a VHS player was $795.
VHS player, $795.
Makes sense. 1978. All right, but there was supposed to be. So in the VHS version, there's a shot.
There's a guy walking a cow along the road that yells back, "Kansas."
Oh, wow.
And then it goes back to him, but I don't know what happened to it. Something happened to it. Shot. It's always maybe, I don't know why that irks me.
Kansas.
Yeah, it's...
Isn't there a level in Diablo where you fight a bunch of cows, too?
Mm-hmm.
I've never played
There's
Diablo.
A cow level.
But, well,
like this movie might have been better on VHS, Colin.
Uh-oh.
Yeah,
uh-oh.
What's wrong with that? Colin,
come
up.
Now you're blessed with Blu-ray.
A better edit.
See, they're poking the bear at this point because, listener, you and I both know that VHS is an inferior format that deserved to die.
If I wanted that cow,
hipster scumbags are keeping that thing
down,
alive.
Well, at least it would have had all the scenes in the movie.
As it was originally intended
for that one scene.
For that one, I mean,
VHS
scene. I mean,
who knows? Who knows what else?
Yeah, I don't. There could have been more. For all I know,
frames.
I don't know.
15 frames, but I remember. Damn, I was like, "Who the fuck's the cow?" Supposed to see that guy.
Right. Now, if only we can get that version all cleaned up on Blu-ray, courtesy of Columbia Pictures. Can we take out a letter writing campaign?
Where's the cow? Hashtag where's the cow?
The hashtag where's the cow?
It's on VHS.
I like it.
It's on VHS.
Which probably means it's on 35 millimeter. They just need to go back to the original source print.
You need to just stop being so pretentious, Colin.
So, okay, what the fuck happened? So he meets Jefferson Airplane.
Well, he meets the blonde girl. I think we were at the blonde girl. He meets the blonde girl in Kansas.
Yeah, he meets the blonde girl in Kansas working at a diner.
Washing dishes.
Has a hot night with her.
He does. Then this is your last night.
Off screen, because
this is your last night for Kansas.
It's basically, it's very similar to how his grandfather meets his woman, his wife, his future wife.
Just
he's
a magnetic.
Just like, I want that babe. And then they, you know. Wow.
I like how he says that. When, like, she's like, is this your only night in Kansas? And he's like, yep. It's like,
was
well.
This the prelude to Forrest Gump?
This, no. You know, I, at one point I was thinking, the music, I was thinking Forrest Gump from the music, definitely.
The music
like,
is great.
Like, the idea, like the music is the timeline of American history. But no, like that's, you know, that's such a good line, like for a dude, I guess, or even the girl too.
She says it. She's because like, so this is your only night in Kansas.
Well, he's like popping off all this fucking smooth ass, like,
yeah,
like you said, his crazy poetry talk.
Oh,
his whole,
know.
Oh, dude, he's like, is everything up to date here? Is Kansas corny? Are you corny? Do you believe in love? You know, it's just like, dude, this guy is fucking like
deep.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's deep.
Yeah. He's a dishwasher.
I am a dishwasher. They're
the deepest, man.
My hands is permanently fucking.
You want some knowledge? Talk to a dishwasher.
She's like, this is your only. This is going to be your only memory
this
of
is
Kansas.
The only map of Kansas.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have to do it.
That's pretty heavy for a one day kind of thing in that movie.
Hey, man.
Like, he showed up, his head dishwasher, it all went his way.
It was.
They wandered off into the field.
It was the summer of love, literally.
Yeah, yeah. That shit happened.
It
man.
Was right before fucking.
How many
everybody...
people do you know that were products of that?
Hired on that quickly.
Hey man, the dishes are dirty now.
Yeah,
somebody's got
to
wash them.
That's why the 50s or the 60s were awesome. Yeah. You could just go from town to town in a stolen car with a bunch
chicks.
Of people,
banging chicks,
awesome people.
Oh boy, we were
I'm watching tonight
and get paid cash same day.
Right, that's what it was. He's like, I'll watch dishes for a night. Get some cash and move on.
Yeah. Move on. Bang this chick. Get out of here.
That's what happens.
There you go. Man.
Well, he wanted her to come with.
How many stories, how many relatives of ours is that their story? I was in Kansas. I banged a chick.
To be fair, he wanted her to come with.
Bada bing, bada boom.
See, he also had that awesome, line about the stars that go on to California. I mean, the guy had lines, dude.
He did.
Yep. Soul of a poet.
He's a poet.
Regular Bill Shakespeare.
Well, so, I mean, you know, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, whatever. What were you going to say?
Well, just beyond, like, the plot of the movie. I mean, just the idea that, like, you know, when you're watching this movie, it's like, this is, well, I would say a heavy drama. But it's a dramatic movie that you generally don't associate with, like, the animated form, right?
Definitely.
And this type of animation then is kind of, like, left these shores, right? I mean... Nobody does anything like this here anymore, right?
Adult animation,
yeah.
In a way.
I mean, this is like a theatrical
kind of
release, right?
It is.
Subject.
I mean, the Japanese do now.
Suspect.
Right?
What's that?
Well, like adult movies that are, like dramas. They're dramas that are, you know, like, that are drawn.
Man, like dramas.
Yeah, oh, for sure. In Japan, they got.
What do they call it when it's like, Jerry dancing with Gene Kelly or,
that's
Roger Rabbit. What, something else. What's that animation?
Oh, when you, like, when
when
you,
it's a,
like,
the real
splice,
life guy next to the animated
character. Oh, it's like a just a composite, right?
It's live action animation.
Composite animation.
Animation in the live action.
It's Kansas animation.
We should reshoot this movie.
Well, I mean, compositing live actors and animation is pretty much all we do in our movies now, right? Right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Hey, yeah. He's right.
Is Jerry
still it? We can resurrect him, I'm sure, through animation.
Can we watch Reanimator and then do that?
So...
Have you guys seen Reanimator?
Yes, we have.
Sorry.
Take that man's mic away. The man is drunk. All right, so, yeah. So where are we on...
I don't know.
Okay, so he met the broad in Kansas.
Broad.
The broad. And then he goes all the way to Cali.
Meets Jefferson Airplane. Starts writing lyrics for him.
Yeah.
Falls off the stage
gets in,
on an
gets
acid
into the
trip.
Whole drive. Hey, man, there's something in this, man. No, there's something in
this. Man, it's all right.
A little water, a little sugar, a little red number two.
Nah, man, there's something in it.
It does manage to hit like every single drug that like has come to these shores. Like,
drugs and music, man. You gotta.
You can't have one without.
Yeah,
you really can't.
You gotta. It's about getting into a different mindset than listening.
You go try and make some music right now.
Well, it's just. It's also.
Do it.
You know, it's like is the position of the guy who made the. I mean, like there's a lot of like emotional pain in this movie, right? Every single one of these characters, with the exception possibly of Benny. That's why he dies, right? Because he's the only one who doesn't suffer
for
his
got
art.
Blown up.
That's true.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to bother him much.
Stella, don't touch the box! Stella!
You got me pretzels.
Yeah, that was a good scene, dude.
It was good.
You think,
I liked it.
You
like,
think
she
got pretzels?
I
yeah, and that kid,
I do.
He didn't
no,
even
no, we're all just like, oh, it's
he
not going to be
like
good.
Flinch.
Don't
he just
touch the box.
Don't touch the box.
Stopped and
this
started
good,
playing
good
piano
story
again.
To this movie. It's a good progression. It. I mean, I'm associating, like, it feels Godfather-ish to me. That's what,
that's
the feeling. That's the feeling I get.
This is the Godfather of cartoons.
It is. I mean, maybe that's laying too much on it, but it really feels like it. It's got that feeling to it.
Yeah.
And I like that for it.
What was his entity at the end before he, you know, the blonde haired kid turned into the punk rock star? What was
David Bowie?
You know, the dad that wandered off
Tony?
The guitar.
Tony.
Tony.
I mean, was don't he sell it all that on great place. Of an artist? I mean, they are always trying to get him to write a song. Why aren't you writing our songs? Why aren't you doing this? But he was such a disaster, a mess.
Yeah,
I mean, but how many
fucking
people
junkie. Like
the, doing that shit in that age were disasters?
He says that he doesn't
falling
need
over
money.
Every minute he had, and he's taking on this kid
yeah.
in New York, and
hey, he
and
didn't want
still
it.
Asking
the kid
him to
follow
write
him.
Songs.
But at one point, he says, like, I don't need money. Don't you know I don't need money? All I need is love. It's like, but they still
he's
live
love.
Dirt poor. He's not making anything off of the music that he's written. I
no, but why did they have him still doing it? I mean, was he creative? I couldn't believe he could be being so fucked up all the time. You know what I mean?
It was probably like the, you know how, Elton John has that, his lyricist throughout his entire career. You know, I bet that guy can, you know, I'm sure, not to say that if it wasn't for Elton John, he couldn't do anything.
Sure.
But, you know.
But, I mean, one needs to, I mean, she says it. It's like, don't you know I'm nothing without you? Like, this is that combination.
Yeah, she's nothing. Yeah, he's a good, he's a good songwriter. Yeah,
right.
Because they're singing fucking, whatever, Ride My Beautiful Balloon or whatever. I've always hated that song.
Yeah, the 60s.
Ah, the 60s.
Yeah, we even got like some Sinatra or something in there, right? In the 50s going
on.
I mean,
Benny,
like it,
right?
Yeah, there's a lot of George Gershwin.
Yeah,
you hit
a lot.
Some Cole Porter.
Because you're in New York, right?
Yeah, I suppose, right? But I mean, like that guy just is like the old-timey American songbook, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And then yeah. you know it moves into who's the guy?
Who's
Blue
a
Moon guy? Is it Bobby Darin? No, what's his name? Is it Bobby? Who sings Blue Moon?
Fuck, I don't know. There's a lot of versions.
Yeah, the fucking Jesus kid. But he's
versions,
in there.
But.
Bobby Darin, didn't he do Beyond the Sea? Isn't that Bobby Darin?
Right, wrong guy.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, yeah, I mean, it works in like a lot of, you know, that, well, I guess that's obvious music at the time, but I mean,
yeah
it's significant.
And then heroin always has to take over.
It always does it.
It's the 60s, damn it, or it's 70s. Or
yeah.
That's what it is.
70s.
It's
the 80s,
it's the post,
or the 90s.
It's the post-Woodstock thing, right? When Haight-Ashbury turned into this nasty fucking, you know, it turned you really saw for the bum-ridden place it was. And not like the hippie haven.
Yeah.
And, I mean, just that was
you see
the,
all the people that died
when,
of heroin.
When Tony's
ground.
On the phone
yeah,
talking about like...
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I know they're doing good. You got any smack? You got any dope?
You got any dope?
Yeah,
I'm hurt
bad.
Real bad.
Pretty bad pain.
Yeah, dude, that's like, holy fuck, dude, that's rough.
Would this movie, would it have been any better if it would have actually been a live action movie?
I would watch, I would like to see it live action.
I
like,
would.
It's a good enough, it, like, it's a good
I,
story.
I
like, live action would be good, too.
But
it
I don't know
it
if you
would
could
be
do
so
that
long.
Live action. You
yeah,
know what I mean?
No, but
yeah.
that's the thing. Like, the.
I don't know if that, like, it feels like the production value wouldn't be as good. I mean, I don't know. Maybe.
I'm sure you could
if
make
you
it as good
if
it was.
Had an unlimited
if you had, okay, sure, yeah.
yeah.
If
you could make it as good,
but
the transitioning.
Do you think you could do those, like, 5-year edits, though?
That's the
in
thing.
A live action, though?
That's
like,
the
I don't
thing
know.
Where
I,
the
I
animation.
I think that would be hard. Yeah, the animation makes
can,
it really easy to just.
They do in a few scenes where they do the audio progression for over the years. Like,
yeah.
and I've seen that done in movies too. Fincher's done it before,
yeah.
where you just hear the audio over
yeah,
the
like
years.
Yeah, like famous sound clips.
Yes, famous sound clips that lead you,
that's
you know,
pretty genius.
That past time and everything. Really? But I think the animation lends itself to, you know, the passing of time. I think that works better in the animation. I'm sure you could do it in film. I'm sure it's been done.
It has,
but it works.
I'm racking my brain right now. I've seen something
yeah,
recently.
Gump.
Forrest
like, fucking Gump.
Dave is yelling Forrest Gump.
I mean,
Gump.
There's something recently where they just kind of take, like, you know, from scene to scene, like, time will pass, and they don't tell you.
Mm.
You just kind of, I can't remember what fucking movie this is, and I just saw it, like, within the last year. I remember remarking on that specific thing that was like, Jesus, it would go from, like, you know, one time period, and then boom, you were 3 months later in the next scene, and they didn't give you any kind of warning, whatever. So, I mean,
girl
you can do
Girl Interrupted
kind of
does that a lot.
Zodiac
she has
that a lot.
Flashbacks
yeah. well, there,
all
you
the
go.
Time.
Bicentennial Man is this movie. Am I right?
Back to the
Bicentennial
Man.
It's one guy who goes through the generations, not all
Bicentennial Man was pretty gradual. It didn't seem like... Like I said, this movie is almost literally every 30 seconds. You're zipping along 5 years, 5, 10 years.
Well, see, I think it would. I would be interested in seeing it in live action, but I feel like it would be twice as long. like with live action, with real actors, I feel like they'd have to spend more time with those scenes. They couldn't pull it off in just 30 seconds or something.
Couldn't.
Yeah, well, no, but they did. But they did, yeah.
They did.
Well, they did, but I don't know
but
if they could do
it.
Maybe
we wouldn't buy it.
I don't, maybe not. Yeah, I don't think you would if it was real actors. I think they would have to spend more time on it.
Because being animation, that's with why we're scenes. Able to have those transitions being just these kind of like small little picture boxes of randomly changing mm-hmm. pictures and with some classy music. You mm-hmm. know? I don't know if you could do that.
Mm.
Nope, no.
Anyone see the
Oliver Stone?
The illustrious, yeah. The illustrious Hype Williams, music video director, did a Kanye West video called, is it Heartless?
What is this?
Heartless.
It's an homage to American pop. He did,
is it?
Yeah, he like,
oh, yeah, I've seen it.
Kanye
he rotoscopes Kanye in it. Yeah.
And I think some of the backgrounds, because I was looking at this, I'm like, you know, it's not when he's going. They're not in Vegas. Where are they? Like Atlantic City or something. Wherever they're at, where it's like all neon, you know,
crazy
backgrounds. I'm like that, I think, is from that video.
I just want to point out that Colin just referenced Kanye West.
Yeah. That's
I'm plugged
first.
In. What are you
that's
talking about?
Yeah. No, Colin referenced
okay,
Kanye West,
not,
and everyone was like,
I'm plugged in.
What?
That officially eliminates
not why.
You.
What? We didn't
oh,
know.
Yeah, I know you're
you
aware of
him.
It. I just didn't
you
know that you would ever actually
above.
Do it.
So.
Boom.
So he meets
knowledge drop.
Yeah.
I mean, this is where the movie does like just to get to the point, I guess, like kind of stretch it where he's like in a heroin like
spiral
in Kansas with the band.
Yep, he goes
and,
back
and
to
he does
Kansas.
Wander into a cornfield,
and his son is there. You know, like somehow his son is
there.
And, like.
Because his son's in Kansas.
His
You're
son's in
Kansas.
Kansas. But like,
my dad was some sort
but
of mystery.
There's like a whole like missing thing. Like, did the kid know?
I don't
that
think
Tony
so.
Was his dad. I mean, he had to have. That's why he went with him. Something had to clue him off, and why?
Yeah. I think he told him. I think he told him.
Well, they both
well,
have that.
The
they
mom,
don't
but
show it.
There's a part where the mom
nice.
Informs the kid of something. Where
something
it is identifiable
somewhere.
That he is his dad.
And you don't know, because it's, as soon as they're... Because, yeah, like you said, he, like, leaves the show, and you got some fucking Janis Joplin doing Summertime as he, like, screams and feels
right.
and remembers the love lost.
The pain.
Kids,
the pain of the
right?
drugs and the memories makes him scream in cornfield.
Going on in this movie.
Shrimp.
What the fuck? Shrimp.
And then Pete's
it
just
been a really nice segue.
So then Pete's just like with him from that point on, right? So you don't know.
Yeah. But there's that. I love that. There's a nice scene where he's like, "Why do you think I'm doing it?" Like he says something.
Oh,
you know,
the
to his son.
Why'd you come with me? Yeah. Why'd you help
why do
me
you
think?
Think? Like they
why
know.
You think?
Yeah. They know.
Well, by that
the
point,
movie
they,
does this show
yeah. But by that point, they know that they're father and son.
Yeah.
Yes. But that point, that moment's kind of cool because it's like they're both saying that they love each other, but they can't
without
actually like those people are so. What would you say?
What do you mean those people? No.
Well,
yeah, no.
Immigrants.
Tony and Pete. Those two people.
Yes.
Are so like walled off that like, they can't even admit it. And then I think at that moment
they're very
Tony.
Emotionally
well, because,
isolated.
Because
at that
Tony
point.
Didn't have a father. So how
well,
can he be a father
thing.
And a Pete?
Yeah,
but he has been for like a couple. Of, well, I guess he hasn't ever seen it that way. They're just traveling.
The kid just
right?
fucking follows him basically, and like
I like the switchblade moment. Where
wasn't
both
it fun?
Say, yeah,
like sleeping in the. Isn't that weird? Yeah, they'll just like go to sleep whenever it's late. Let's pull over to this pig farm.
They were under the docks or something. They're just like. Tsh.
Yeah, it was in New York somewhere under a bridge. Wasn't
it felt like it was under a bridge.
No,
yeah.
Some guy comes up to it was like a pig farm, and he was like sleeping in the.
I thought
like,
that was fucking
trough.
Like the Golden Gate.
That's
like
why the,
like
farmer,
under a bridge.
The farmer comes up. Really?
No, I felt like they were under a bridge.
I don't know, I'll have to look at that.
Yeah, I thought it was a bridge.
It felt like it was under
weird.
A bridge.
What the hell? That'd be crazy. I've seen this.
You don't have hobos on a pig farm. You got
it's under
a bridge.
Well, New York, there's country in New York. They're out there, you know.
There's pigs in New York.
There's pigs in New York,
you
right?
You gotta pick up heroin all over the place.
That's true.
Sorry. All
right,
so
but that was sad, right? When he asked, when he gave him the goodbye, the wave.
Like, yeah,
you know,
yeah,
like,
and he doesn't say anything about it. He just does that. He's
just
walking.
Just does
away.
The wave that he's been doing the whole movie or whatever when he's like done with something.
Yeah.
Hey, don't sell it all in one place.
Don't sell it all in one place. Like, hey, you Pete.
Yeah, gives him a bag full of Coke.
Yeah, hey, there you go. So
good setting ball. You up for the
you
rest
say anything
of
else? No. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's when fucking Pete turns into rock and roll, the embodiment of rock and roll. Well, of fucking.
He becomes pure rock and roll.
Motor
at that point.
City fucking. Like.
I thought it was kind of cool because, you know, he grew up, he hated that, you know, his I guess Tony would have been his father figure, yeah, right? Yeah. It was. I know it was his dad, but okay.
My dad.
But you know, he watched that side of the spectrum. Watched his dad spiral out of control on heroin, and then he realized how much money his dad would spend on drugs, and
see,
then
he was
took
smart
it.
About it.
Yeah, and
he,
took
I
it
believe
from,
this kid never did a drug in his life.
Yeah, probably. He didn't want to be on that side,
but he used
so
drugs
he flipped
to get into
it.
The business.
He did.
Exactly.
He did. Smart kid.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, but people fucking buy it.
I don't want to be Candyman no more.
Of the coin.
And that's like, I love when he's walking down the street and he hears the rabbi guy singing. And then he kind of like does his little like jig thing, you know? So he's like this, he's like a worldly dude that like, he understands all the generational things.
Right. Well, see, but that's because that's his lineage, though.
Yeah, but like when I was watching that, I'm like, does this guy even know, like, you know, where he comes from? I mean, he guess he does because Tony tells him that his father was, you know, this genius. He's supposed to be this genius, but he doesn't really tell him that much. I took this, you know, right or wrong, that like as he was walking by the rabbi, that was like showing that the genetic appreciation.
But
the music
I think it's also like the natural inclination towards that.
Yeah,
kind of also plays a factor. But yes, the fact that everything is filtered down into Pete, where like he sees, it's almost like he sees the music in everything at that point.
It seems
like he's
like
so
he,
in tune with it.
Yeah,
he's got it all at that point.
I guess
he does.
Like all of his stuff is.
Well,
like,
he embodies all four, all of his forefathers' talents. He embodies all of them. He's got the showbiz. He's got the musical talent like his grandfather, and then he's got his father's ability to write and embody it into you know a piece to compose, if you will.
With the coolest Pat Benatar song ever.
Exactly.
Hell is for Children. That's a cool Pat Benatar song. You don't say that.
Is that Pat Benatar? Hell is for Children.
And the movie leaves us with Freebird, for God's sake. You got to give it some props right there for leaving off.
Well, it's a very. This was actually the first time I ever heard Night Moves.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, what? The first time you saw this movie.
Not tonight. Yeah. The first time you watched
it. Tonight. The first time I seen this movie was the first time I heard that song. Though.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, so you always, every time.
Because I've seen this movie.
Who picked
every,
this movie?
Me.
Travis said.
And how many times have you seen it?
Oh, shit.
Thousands.
A lot.
You didn't know that was Bob Seger?
No, I knew. I didn't say that. The first time I saw this movie was the first time I heard that song.
Oh.
Yeah. That was probably
so. Every time you hear it, you probably think of this movie, huh?
Well, I do, but I'm always pissed off that it doesn't start with the piano.
Oh,
yeah,
because the song starts with the acoustic guitar. Where in the movie, he starts with a piano, and I always think that song sounds better with a piano because this fucking movie. I'll never have like my Night Moves.
No, you'll never hear it like everybody else does.
Again.
Yeah,
it's like,
he's never in the movie. Well, I gotta watch the whole fucking movie.
I did get the soundtrack, and
no.
Oh, really?
Well, dude, you'll be surprised how weak the soundtrack to this is. It's like with all the fucking songs in this movie, this should be like. I mean, this is like the Forrest Gump soundtrack of like you want to like compare them.
That's a good soundtrack.
Yeah. Well,
They went through the years and picked the best songs of it to represent the movie. Yeah. It's, it would have to be a soundtrack. But yeah.
Do you really, really dig this movie?
I fucking dig this movie.
Well, we gotta wait to the wrap ups to find out like what he actually thinks.
Speaking of
wrap ups, we should probably so stick with us, listeners, on the other side of mailbag. We're going to have our final thoughts. We'll go around the room and we'll find out what everybody thought of this movie. But before that, we have to summon Igor. Igor, bring us the mail.
Masters, the mail. I've got the mail. So many letters. Our followers are rising.
Oh, thank you, Igor. We got a couple comments here from Facebook and from Twitter. on Facebook, commenting on our previous episode a couple back, The Lords of Salem, Jillian Whitney writes in and says, Jenny's recommendation of The Lords of Salem is exactly how I feel about this movie. I wouldn't put it on, but if someone asked me if I wanted to watch it, I wouldn't argue. I fell asleep watching it in the theater, which was a first for me. Just watch Rosemary's Baby instead.
So well, I think Travis you, and I both get a... Jillian. We both win.
All right, well, on my team, then I have Alexandria May Hedman, who says, I loved it. That's all she needs to say. And Dave Albertson writes in and says, you're gay.
Thank you, Lexi.
There you go.
Wait, what?
Did you just write in?
Yeah, from the back row, Dave just wrote
Dave just like, wrote in to me.
You're gay.
Live.
There you go. Thank you, Dave.
I don't all right. think you're allowed to do that anymore.
I don't think so. Yeah, there you go. So on Twitter.
Constructive contribution as always. Thank you, Dave.
Yep. On Twitter, we G-Money has written in. Oh, he's got a
more credible.
Well, it could Dave. Be it could be Panda3_JG.
G-Money,
thanks G-Money. For listening. He says that he's been, this is more of a hypothetical thing for all of us. All
right.
He's been on a sequel binge and has rediscovered gems of his youth, including Hellraiser, Inferno, Psycho 4, Wrong Turn 2. He asks us to rate these and name some.
Wait, can you repeat the question?
Wait, hold on.
You guys who are dealing with the bartending thing, you're probably going to have to hear this question.
No.
Fucking say the name of it.
Cinnamon horchata. It's a horchata. It's like it's in there. Trust me. You found it, didn't you?
Thank you. Fufu beer.
I needed to taste purdy.
Okay, so are we ready for this?
Yes.
G-Money says he's been on a sequel binge and has rediscovered gems of his youth. Hellraiser Inferno, Psycho 4, Wrong Turn 2. He says rate these and name some.
What if we haven't seen them?
I would go Psycho 4, Hellraiser Inferno.
Psycho 4 was the beginning.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Is he asking us to rate them as far as which ones are better? Hellraiser Inferno is the one with Craig Sheffer, right?
I would assume it's from best to least favorite. Most favorite to least favorite.
Oh, okay. Well, Psycho 4 is number one for me because I think that was...
That's the beginning, right?
Yeah, with Henry Thomas.
Yeah.
That was the better one. I didn't see Wrong Turn 2. Somebody... Yeah.
Let's see.
That's Joe Lynch.
Seen that one.
Did that one?
And what are some of our favorite sequels?
You know what?
Sequels?
It is. Joe Lynch did that one. You're right. His
favorite underrated sequel. Well, Predator 2. Throwing that out there.
Critters.
I think it's
Critters 2.
Right. I'm going for Child's Play 3.
I'm surprised you didn't say Prom Night 2.
That's a good one.
I haven't seen it in a long ass time. I saw it when I was like 12. I don't know. I can't.
It's Halloween. Halloween 2 is good, right?
Halloween 2
that's
is
good. Yeah, that's good.
Right? Oh, he asked us to add some. That's right.
Yeah, that's he's good. Asking. Okay. Well, anyway, and he has something
Toy
else.
Story
but maybe
too.
We'll save that for the next episode of G Money. But thank you very much
thank
for
you,
your contributions to this week's show.
G Money.
Now, final thoughts on American Pop, beginning with Brent and working their way around the room. Right.
Yeah, I mean, like, what can you say that we haven't already covered? I think that the peanut gallery is cracking up, but it's perfect. As far as a, like, I didn't know what to expect because I didn't know anything about this movie, American Pop. And, like, I didn't even know it was animated, to tell you the truth, Travis. Last week when you said you were going to watch it. But watching it tonight, it is. It's one of those films where it's like it's all... it's there's no fat in the film. It's all the like the best parts of like this generations of this family. And it's, you know, it's underscored to really good music that also kind of scores the timeline of each generation that you're dealing with. And I know before we watched it, Travis, you talked about the dialogue and you were right on. Like the dialogue is fantastic. There's nothing boring about this movie. Like everything is great. I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to find a fault in it and I can't really find it. I would actually like to see, not that things are the same now, but I would like to see a sequel. you know, like pick up from the 80s and move on. But yeah, I mean, I would definitely recommend it to anybody out there that if you are a fan or if you've ever heard of music, if you like music,
have you heard of it?
If you're not a robot, I think that you should definitely watch it.
Travis, you mentioned something earlier. This part of the something about a trilogy, heavy metal.
Oh,
is it? Were you just relating movies?
I just to me, I call it part of the 80s like music cartoons when it comes to heavy metal, rock and roll, and American pop. Very like music centric cartoons. Yeah. You know, not that they have anything to do with each other.
Sure,
but where music seems to be the main. Focus of the story.
I kind of agree with Brent. I would like to see a progression on this. Like they stopped in the 70s, 80s. I mean, to see it go on from there would be interesting as well. I thought this was a really good movie. Like I had a good time watching it. It's a very musical movie. Even the dialogue in this movie is musical as far as I'm concerned. Like really good and really good story. Definitely recommend it. I had a really good time watching this.
Yes. When I heard we were going to be watching American Pop, I didn't know what to expect, honestly. I was a little scared. But, no, I really enjoyed this movie. I thought it was not was what I was expecting at all. But the music is great. I really like the story of, you know, the lineage of the family. And how music is always involved in their life somehow, whether they want it or not. And how the final generation of the family, like, finally makes it, prevails, the happy ending. You don't get that very often around here at the Saturday Night Freak Show. The happy ending. And I enjoy it. So, yes, I would recommend this movie highly. And I liked it, too, because I'm very partial to my animation movies, so, and I like this one a lot. So yes, go
ahead, Colin. You're partial to your animation
movies? I am because you know I'm a Disney nut.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, all right. Yeah, I mean, I think this is my favorite Ralph Bakshi movie, which is kind of ironic because I own Fire and Ice and don't own American Pie. But yeah, I mean, I think it's. I mean, like we were talking about before, I mean, this is a dramatic film that only happens to be animated. And I think it, you know, it does, as Sean said, has that kind of flavor of like, maybe it's because of the like Italian connection or something.
Because it has that
kind of, yeah, it evokes the same, yeah, because it's a saga, right?
It really is. Yes.
You're covering so much. I mean, it could be longer. I mean, it could be like a 2.5 hour movie or whatever. I mean,
just expanding the different eras.
Yeah,
that they
obviously more material there. Sure. That would be, you know, I think good for a film and for a story. So the fact that it is a short, you know, it's like I sit there and I'm like, okay, is the music? You know, you're looking at it like, is this the music of the time that they're playing in all these, you know, moments? Or is this just what they could afford in the licensing? But I think, like, you son of a bitch. I just got handed an extra shot of rum. Yeah. So I think that it's effective. It's not, like, on point like the Forrest Gump soundtrack that we talked about tonight. I mean, that's more like everybody has heard those tunes right. And can recognize, you know, where they're from. These are a little more like, you know, a little just off left of center, which is actually kind of what I like about it. It endears me to the movie more, you know, because then it's its own thing and it's not using the same musical history beats that like everybody else uses. Yeah, you know what I mean? So what? So, but yeah, I mean, all that aside, I like the animation style. I've never really had a problem with Bakshi's, rotoscoping, you know, because that's as he's the primary guy who uses it, it becomes like, well, that's, you know, you can identify most of that as a Ralph Bakshi movie then, right? I mean, that's that guy's thing.
It's also an art form on its own. I don't, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's obviously, I mean, I don't think, you know, to say that it takes any, you're still doing the same amount of drawings as a guy who animates it from scratch.
Yeah.
You know, the only thing is that the guy who's animating it from scratch, everything comes from his imagination, you know, where this is you're relying on a moving model. Okay. Yeah. So we got that out of the way. You know, I still think it works and is a valid, you know, it's still a valid form of 2D animation. Yeah, I mean, I would definitely recommend. I think you got to see American Pop. I mean, just to appreciate what I think is, I mean, at least in this country, right? I mean, it's ironic because it's American Pop. It's talking about, like, American history, but we don't go to see these movies anymore and produce animation for adults. The Japanese and the French are doing it now. So this is kind of like, you know, toward the end of a, I mean, it was a short-lived era, I want to say, animation for adults. From the counterculture of the 60s through, like, the, I mean, what, Cool World. I mean, who else was doing it, really? I mean, there's right. little Overall, pockets here and there. But just the adult
Duckman.
Material. I mean, Beowulf, maybe.
Yeah, maybe kinda, you comedy know? Cartoons.
Zemeckis, what?
Rick and Morty.
Yeah, but you're not going to see anything like the Triplets of Belleville coming out of American anime.
Right.
No.
I mean, unless it's your guy in
Plimpton.
Plimpton, yeah. Plimpton. Or Ralph Bakshi.
Not to say we have a complete view of what is adult animation nowadays. I mean, we do miss things, but yes.
Right. Nothing, I mean, this is a major theatrical release from Columbia Pictures.
Yeah.
You know, you wouldn't see anything like that, I imagine, anymore. Or ever again, maybe. Who knows? So it's, you know, it's an interesting relic of cinematic history also. But yeah, definitely check it out. American Pop.
The reason I love this movie and recommend it for everyone is this is one of those movies, like when you were a kid and you're starting to grow up, you know, you start to think, oh, things like cartoons, you got to like put away. But then wonderful people like Ralph Bakshi show you that, like, oh no, fucking, like, you know, there's weirdo adults that are into this too, and, you know, you can make things, you know, like Ralph Bakshi, his stuff is always a little sexy, but always a little ugly, right? Like, he doesn't just draw, like, beautiful women all the time, you know, he draws, like, really lumpy, mm-hmm. you know, normal people, but at the same time,
he keeps it realistic.
Yeah, it keeps it realistic. But then also, he just has that edge, right? Like you said, that adult edge where, you know, I mean, I guess being like, I don't know, maybe I started watching Ralph Bakshi when I was probably like 11 or whatever. And that's like your next step from Jessica Rabbit, right? Jessica Rabbit introduced you to like, whoa, this fucking cartoon's like sexy.
Sexy cartoons.
You know, and then like I'm interested a little bit more into my cartoons being a little.
What else is sexy cartoons?
You know, yeah. Where the fuck can I find this Japan?
Where's the sexy cartoon section at the video store?
What yeah, dude, that's pretty much what I was like. Yeah, I was like, where is the? Does it got an adult sticker on it? That's what I'm. But yeah, like I don't know. They just kind of showed you how not everything that's deemed for children need to be for children. I always have conversations with people that, can you get emotionally attached to cartoon characters? Can you? It's like, well, I think the answer is yes. It just depends on how the actual movie or story is treated. Japan's got some really wonderful, like, just dramas, right? Just, you know, nothing cartoony about them. Just happen to be animated just because it's probably cheaper than getting a whole production crew together, you know, to just draw shit.
Or it's just the art form, too, right? I mean,
it's the art form, but I also think it's, like in Japan, I think it's budget. They don't necessarily have much of a... That's why their TV shows look like Power Rangers, right? Because they're just... They don't really have the same money towards movies and television the way we do here. So it's like, fuck it. It's easier to... We can draw whatever we can think of. Why limit it to...
But when you look at, like, Wolf Children, right, the movie you introduced me to, it's like that movie could have been made with a Japanese, like,
but
the budget of a Japanese
a dog? Like
feature film.
Because those scenes where the children are going from human to wolf form, like, fluidly, like, that'd be a whole thing, right? I mean, it would just be a whole CG thing, and they don't got the money for, if they don't really, they barely have the money for really good cameras and production equipment, let alone good CG effects, so it's easier just to animate.
There's some Japanese producer out there going like, God damn it, they don't know anything about it.
Yeah, maybe. Well, you guys draw, they draw it. They draw shit, we know it. But, point
Attack
being...
Attack on Titan is like a huge fucking hit right now, and it's like CG giant dudes.
Well, but it's from a cartoon. This movie, no matter what, isn't going to be able to do what that cartoon did, which might not be able, the cartoon might not be able to do what the comic book did. I don't know. Anyway, the point being that, yeah, there is adult material. You don't have to grow up, you know? you can stay a child a little bit longer and just kind of like, you know...
Promise?
Make your subject a little bit more intellectual, I suppose. Instead of, you know... And, I guess I'll mention the music. It's just one of those very music-heavy movies. I've always liked a movie that makes you feel... I don't know how you would describe that. Like, what music does for a movie when they kind of get it right, you know, when they...
I thought you were going to say nostalgia.
I mean, I
like Mean Streets?
I like singing... Like, if there's a good song playing, And, you know, if it's during a break where they're, like, they did montages a lot when they played the songs or something, like, there wasn't a whole lot of dialogue. They had background music, but there was a lot of times they played songs, and it was just a song playing. There wasn't dialogue over it.
Right.
And I like when that happens, and I can sing to it.
Right.
Yeah, you were kind of rocking out during this movie.
It was. There's
some good songs in this movie. That's why it is kind of like the Forest of Sunshine.
Yeah.
I just say the songs are fucking good. I'm not saying
it
like,
is good. It's good.
Good songs.
Yeah, but
they're
as
recognizable.
Though.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I'm just saying that if this was a soundtrack, it would be like a 2 or 3 disc soundtrack. That, you know, I mean, a lot of fucking songs in this movie. And I will always love this movie. It's a great movie.
It's a good movie.
And now we know why.
All right, so that's American Pop on Saturday Night Freak Show. And next week, Sean is going to thrill us with his motion picture choice of a certain movie with a title that is called...
You will be thrilled. We're going to watch Critters 2, The Main Course.
The Main Course.
So go back and listen to our Critters 1 podcast.
Now we shall do 2. The better of the two movies, I think. We'll see. Yeah, you gotta hang up on the Easter thing, but we'll see.
You know why it's Easter? We'll see. So they can paint the critter eggs.
Oh, spoiler. I haven't seen this yet. So that's next week, folks. You'll hear this entire thing happen again on Critters 2,
American Papa.
The Main Course. Next week on the Saturday Night Freak Show. And until then, ladies and germs, the basement is going dark.